The name of the book is I Want You to Shut the Bleep Up, How the Audacity of Dopes is Ruining America. The book is published by Crown, and it's a great pleasure to welcome D.L. Hughley to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Donahue. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I assume you have to giggle a little bit knowing that we can't say the title on the air.
It feels a little subversive. It does. The first time I ever heard somebody say the title was when I was doing a cable show, and they said it, and it just feels subversive to. I didn't think we'd get away with it, but we did, and it feels right to me.
So, this whole thing started by, of course, as a stand-up, you travel the country, and you see its many, many facets. You see its good sides, you see its bad sides.
Right.
And eventually, you write in the book that what you're seeing now, you find terrifying.
Yes. I think that we all, there's a palpable sense of fear in this country. And I think more of it comes from a couple of places. One is the fact that we know that we're not what we were, and we don't quite know what we will be. And I think there is fear kind of narrows your vision and makes you very tense and makes you very, it immobilizes you. And I think that that's kind of why the country is where it is exactly right now. And I think that, like I said earlier, there's a palpable sense of that.
And you ask the question, why? Why does it have to be that way?
I think in the book I talk about an experience that I think kind of typifies the overall kind of way I see things is that I was on a show, Studio 60, and Nate Corgi was talking about, Stairway to Heaven. And when I heard he and Matthew Perry talking about Stairway to Heaven, I assumed he was talking about the OJ's version of Stairway to Heaven. He was talking about Led Zeppelin, a version I'd never heard. He'd never heard mine. He refused to believe that I'd never heard, Led Zeppelin, and I never had. And I refused to believe that he hadn't heard the OJ because it was a big hit in our community. So that metaphorically, these are two people who have experiences that they're sure other people have, that they are sure that are so common, that are so different, and they form the way we see things. And nobody's willing not only to hear that, you can't hear somebody else's music. Nobody ever goes, hey, man, let me hear that. That could be interesting. And I think that that's how the country is. We see things the way that we see them, and we're certain, so certain that our song is right, that we're unwilling to let the music play. And that's just kind of, a metaphor for what's happening.
You mentioned Studio 60, which was an Aaron Sorkin show. It was a fantastic show. It didn't last very long on the NBC network. And you look at what Aaron Sorkin's doing now with The Newsroom. Is it
right?
Is it a program? Was that show, it seemed like it would be a good fit for you because of the issues that were being discussed, the power of television, the power of politics?
I thought that it was an issue, but at that time, here's the problem. It was more a question of timing. It would have been more resonant had we had the kind of acrimony and upheaval we have right now. Then it had more stakes. But really, in that time we were on Studio 60, it was really kind of benign. You know, we knew we were going to war, but a lot of people had settled for it. But there was no kind of political upheaval, mostly because Democrats and liberals were kind of soft and they kind of let things get away. But there was no animus, there was no vitriol on television every day. There wasn't this sense of angst in the country. And I think now there is, and now the show that he's doing on the network resonates. It's right in the socket, just like West Wing was at that time. So I think it was more a question of timing with Studio 60.
And now you're out there and you're basically with this book saying much of the same things that the Newsroom and other programs make the point of, which is that we've reached such a polarized point in our dialogue that we're unable to have a conversation that is productive. And do you see a way out? Do you understand what has to happen?
No, well, I only asked. I'm only asking the questions here.
You don't have to answer them.
Here's the thing. I think people need to decide what they are. Either we're going to be the brochure, because the brochure of America is great. Like it's almost like you ever seen something at a hotel on the computer and you book it and you get there and go, this ain't what they told me. None of the amenities are here. Where's freedom? Where's all that? And I think that you have a group of people who call themselves patriots, but are so determined that either they will run the country or wreck it. And that would be like if you loved a woman, you just it didn't work out, and you constantly did things so that she would have a hard time and come back to you. You wouldn't say that that was loving. You would call that a stalker. Much like I don't think that you're very patriotic when you refuse to do things that are specifically for the good of the country, to move the country forward, when you would rather break it and see it fall to its knees and burn it to the ground so you get to be the hero and rebuild it. That's not love, and that's when there is that sense of either my way or no way, then how could we move forward?
Were you among the hopeful in 2008
No.
of the election?
No, I think that I think Barack Obama is a tremendously intellectual and a good man in a horrible job. This job of being a president, a politician in America, is a rotten business. And I think you have to have a certain amount of rotten in you. And you have to be comfortable with it and good at it. I think he's good at the intellectual part, not good at the rotten part. And he's surrounded with people that are. And I think it's kind of a bit like a lamb fighting lions. And it looks like that sometimes.
Now you've met Mitt Romney. What's the impression you have of this guy?
He's unlikable, unrelatable. I think that when you go to England and the English find you arrogant and boring, the people that invented arrogant and boring, then you're pretty arrogant and boring. Here's my overall problem with Romney. Is that he's found a way, and the people that he knows and everybody he's around has found a way to profit even in these times. So why would he believe that there's something that needs to be changed? Why would he believe that that things are bad? Romney believes that he's found a way to do it, so if you're more like him, then you'll find a way. I heard him say when he was in Detroit, he was at, Papa John's Pizza gave a fundraiser for him, and he said Democrats would say nobody should live like this. Republicans would say everybody should live like this. Well, making a statement like everybody can live like this is patently impossible for everybody to live in a mansion.
Mm.
And you don't believe that. But the fact that you say that tells me how far away you are from reality. So in other words, you don't need to change the system. The system works fine. You need to change your attitude about the system.
What about the evil part?
I actually am not. I don't think he's evil. I think that I've heard this before, that he is. And another problem I have, I think that there are people on the right who are certainly more aggressive and more ideological than he is. And I think that he would not be able to stand up to them. I think that they would run roughshod on him, and we'd have an agenda far to the right of Bachman. So that would be scary.
You read in the book, going back to President Obama, and I found this interesting, that you write that you feel that this is a president who was never bullied growing up, and if he had been, the presidency would be much different.
I think so. I think that when you were bullied, and I talk about a cat named Bubba Rankin, who was, you know, in my neighborhood, and he bullied me, and he, like most bullies, took the path. I was the smallest. I was, you know, easiest target. And I learned from him not necessarily to win, but to fight and to stand and to make sure that he knew that it was not going to be an easy win. And I think you recognize the sign of a bully. Bullies aren't pacified. You can't just say, let's be reasonable, let's work together. You've never seen that happen. Bullies have to know that it'll be hard for them, that it'll cost them some skin. And I think that once there was a palpable difference in President Obama's presidency once Joe Wilson called him a liar and there was no response politically or verbally from him, even from the Democratic Party. I think that they went, this guy is wounded, now we'll attack. And you could see actually what happened. If he'd been bullied, I think his response would have been different.
And what kind of response would you see during the State of the Union address?
If if he would have said, now obviously I'm not the president. I've never been in that position. All I do know is how to respond to people that think that they can do things to you. And so I think if he'd have said, you don't have to respect me, but you have to respect this office. I'm the president of the United States, and remove this man from the prison, from this proceedings, or from this ceremony. I think it would have looked different to people. I mean, you look at the articles you saw after that. He's weak. He's not a leader. Remember, that didn't happen before that.
Hmm. When you think about the situation and you look at the audacity of dopes and how it's ruining America, where does your optimism lie?
In the fact that when most people hit rock bottom, when there's nowhere else to go but up, when you have no one to blame but yourself, when you become introspective, you can then make changes. Like, we want tough love for our children, for our schools. We want tough love for everything but us as a group, as a nation. And I think we're at that point now where we're ready to say, look at the people who we listen to the most, and look at what it's wrought us. All the people who are so certain, with the biggest microphones, who are so certain that they were right. If we go to war, everything will be all right. If we do cut taxes, everything will be all right. If we elect this guy, everything will be all right. If you give me more money, everything will be all right. We are like children who look for somebody, our parents, to come and save us, and we have all the answers we need.
Well, the name of the book is "I Want You to."
Come on, say it, man. It's only $200,000.
All right. I want you to shut the bleep up. How the audacity of dopes is ruining America. It's published by Crown. D.L. Hughley, a great pleasure. Best of luck with your work in the book.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much. The book is published by Crown. D.L. Hughley is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.